You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Johnson.
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Bates Motel After Show.
We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip.
And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Bates Motel After Show.
Oh God!
Oh God!
I gotta say, Nando. Now that I'm hearing it, I have reservations about this song.
You have reservations about the song "Living in a Box" by the '80s band "Living in a Box," one hit wonder. Living
in a box. Wake up to every morning.
Yes, this is my workout music. Living in a box, doing cardio. Hi everyone, welcome to the AfterBuzz.
You gotta understand that he's wearing a one piece silver unitard because it is still 1986.
Don't put that visual out there.
And he's got like rainbow headband.
Please don't put that visual.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
This is the Bates Motel AfterBuzz show.
Oh, I can't get it out now. Oh,
this is Nando Velasquez, and across from me is the very, very visual. Unfortunately, visual, Joe Sanfilippo. And I mean that in many ways. And Raw, if you were listening to the last show. And
nice
the Raw, Joe
guys.
Sanfilippo. And right next to him is the, the determined, the adamant, the stubborn,
the clinging to things that make no sense.
Yes. The reason why we bring this up right now is because I will just ask you point blank. Did Norman Bates have sex with Blair Watson?
We still don't know.
How do we not know?
Okay, because...
If
you guys can just give me 3 minutes.
3 minutes.
You could have 3 days. You cannot change human biology.
Let's hear it.
We're still in the intro. It's Dua Casey talking, by the way.
Listen. Hi.
I did mention Dua Casey. I did. And that's Steve Lemieux, who he was hung up on the 80s song.
Steven, I don't know if you were in the fifth grade when they talked to you about how this works.
Oh, dear. I'm living in a box.
Yes, he is.
Steve, my gum will not end up in the carpet. I put it in my Coke can.
Okay.
I'm scared.
Now we're doing housekeeping stuff on the show.
Okay.
So follow me down this rabbit hole for just a moment.
Okay.
Right. I'm with you. Here we go.
Rabbit hole.
Yeah. We still don't know if this is a memory that he had or if this was a dream. If you kind of take it and look at this through Norman's perspective for just a minute, last episode we found out two things. We found out Norman learned who Miss Watson's father is.
Uh-huh.
And Norman was also asked incessantly by Sheriff Romero,
mm-hmm,
if he had had sex with Blair Watson. Now he's stuck in a box for the majority of the episode,
yes,
wondering what happened to him, who's taken him, what's going on. He's mm-hmm stuck in this box. At some point, I'm sure he was wondering how those pearls came into his possession, like shortly after Blair Watson's death.
Mm-hmm.
That had to have gone through his head. So now these pearls were in his pocket. They fell out of his pocket. Now he's going through all of this. Now, is this actually something that he is remembering?
Uh-huh.
Or is this something that he is dreaming? Now,
Now,
if this is something that he, at least for himself, believes is a memory,
uh-huh,
does he now think that his mother was actually there?
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yes.
Just a physical thing, really.
Yes.
Do you think that his semen got into Blair Watson through the use of his memory? I don't know. I hate to interrupt
that
this because
like X-Men. That's like
because
X-Men type stuff.
I really believe that you're going down an interesting path because I think it's worth discussing the memory versus reality thing with him. But as far as whether or not he had sex with Blair Watson, they found his junk, his spunk, his whatever you want to call it. The situation is irrefutable. His stuff is there.
It's not irrefutable. It was found by Deputy Lynn, who we don't even know if she's telling the truth. We don't know if it's accurate. We don't know if it's accurate. It's just what we know.
You're making me afraid for you now.
I'm telling you, it's a lot more fun watching the show this way.
Okay.
It's fun to cross your eyes and watch fireworks, too, but that doesn't mean you're seeing exactly what's happening.
I want to thank you, Joe, for just talking about your theory with so much etiquette when you say junk. I just love that.
We've gone down this road gently in the past. Apparently, Apparently, we went down the road, but we left Dua back here on the other
street. Here's a serious question having to do with that whole thing.
Sure.
If you do not believe that Norman, based on that dream sequence, memory, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it, if you do not believe that Norman still had sex with Blair Watson, do you believe that he killed Blair Watson based on that same memory, that same dream?
It's all up in the air. I don't, like, personally me, I'm starting to believe that, you know, yes, this is probably more of a memory than it is, but everything that happened, like in the movie, Psycho, he never remembered anything that he blacked out. So now that he's remembering his blackouts, this is kind of huge.
Okay.
Now, are they actual accurate memories? Mm-hmm. This is something to be said because he didn't even remember it to, in the beginning, and now he's remembering it. So what if he's remembering is accurate? We're only seeing this from his point of view right now.
I love you desperately, and I just want to be perfectly clear. He had sex with and then killed Blair Watson. That is what happened.
That is what they're showing happened.
That's what happened! That's what happened!
Before we continue, I did...
What the whole point of this guy is he kills women eventually. This is the origin story.
That is a point.
Was the Batman origin story, when the kid puts on a mask, we wouldn't spend the first 2 hours going, I don't think he put on the mask. He put on the mask. It's a Batman origin story. If this is the origin story for Norman Bates, we know eventually he kills women. He's killing a woman eventually. It's going to happen.
Correct. However, is he there yet? I mean, it's all like reality versus...
No, it's so much fun.
He killed her. Why are you getting so personally offended
because he really wants Norman to get some.
I feel
he
like
really
we're going
wants.
In a circle of madness.
I will say...
I don't think he had sex with her.
Okay. Okay. Before we continue, I just want to add that Joseph Braswell, who usually hosts this show, is not here. He was here earlier, if anyone was watching The Blacklist, but he had to step out and get
so
drunk, I believe.
Fed up by my opinion, he left.
He's so fed up by your opinion.
I've never seen him throw things like that. And he's a large man. It was scary.
Absolutely. So I just wanted to bring that up.
What did you say?
And then also, what I wanted to also say is, look. The last time we saw Norman have sex, or supposedly, allegedly have
when
sex,
left, when last we very, left Norman,
it was a very dreamlike sequence that he had with Nicola Peltz's character,
Bradley.
Yeah, it was a very dreamlike sequence, and I remember last season, you know, when we saw that, I was even questioning if that was a dream sequence or not. Just
no,
the way
I believe
it was
we
shot.
Had a whole episode about that.
But then we realized that yes, they did have sex. So that leads me to believe that this is just the way Norman perceives the way sex is supposed to be. That little dreamlike sequence. But I still do feel that him being locked up in that box the whole episode, just about the whole episode from the first 5 minutes in, was him. Last week when we saw Romero confronting Norman about whether or not he had sex with her, we saw him visibly shake and we saw him just try to avoid and run off. This is Norman trapped in a box where he can't get away.
That's
and ultimately has to confront everything he's done and has a lot of time to think. And you saw how violent he was getting in that box toward the beginning of the episode.
Yeah.
Incredibly violent. And then he also had that one sequence saying his mom is always inside him, which is a little creepy. But pretty much saying how his mom's always there with him, always inside him, which makes you think like a typical mother would say, I'm always there with you. I'm always that voice in your head. But at the same time, I'm always that voice in your head that when you black out, I become you type of thing. So I really do think that this was an episode where when Norman really is forced because he has no place to go. Mm-hmm. He's trapped in that really small receptacle. Well, I don't want to say box again, but I just did. Where he's forced to actually realize what kind of person he is.
I think that's a hot take right there. That's an excellent point.
That is a very good point. Yeah, it is a very good point. Now, with that being said...
He clearly fantasized about this thing, and then he shared that fantasy with the crime lab.
For sake of argument, let's just say that this is a memory, or at least he believes it to be a memory. Now, if this is actually a memory, and he is not quite certain, you know, what he's remembering, if he actually blacked out the actual event... Does he think that his mother was actually there with him?
Yeah, he does.
So he thinks that his mother was there, and it's not just him envisioning his mother. Because as we know, last season, when that scene actually took place, he was having visions of his mother on the couch.
Well, he has visions of her,
but now as he's remembering it,
seeing
his mother on the couch, not knowing whether or not she was real or not.
That's a good question.
Now, is he going to think, you were standing there while I was having sex with her?
Now, that to me, if you separate that from the idea of the sex, that's a very interesting question. But if you include that with, therefore he didn't have sex, then you sound like a lunatic. So here's the question.
genius and insanity. It,
right? So here's the question. I think that's a great question. So is Norman right now aware that when he's remembering this in the box, mm-hmm. is he aware that he mentally puts his mother in places she's not actually at? Mm. Is he aware that he adds her into scenes, that he mm-hmm. fantasizes that she's there and has her telling him things? Is he becoming aware of that, or are we just the audience becoming aware of that? Is that the question?
That's actually my question, because if not, like, where does this put him now?
Well, it's interesting considering if you saw clips for next week too, seeing a scene between Norman and his mom in next week's episode, that question actually would probably be a very important question to figure out leading into next week.
He seems very angry with her.
Yes, because he does seem very angry with her. I mean, the other thing to remember is we've seen Norman not completely blacked out, like in a violent rage, but we saw him with Cody a few times where he's just completely numb and he's just standing there. Mm-hmm. And according to that memory dream that he had, he was pretty much not doing anything when Miss Watson came up to him and started unbuckling his pants. He was not like that eager, horny teenage boy that I'm sure you have experience with.
I must tell you, I have never had an English teacher that I like that. I had never, no, you know, I'd have gone to her house all day, every day if that was good. I need some help with my homework.
I mean, yeah, he was not, he was not moving at all. It was really, she was doing all the work in that memory.
No.
She was pretty much doing all the work in that memory, so he was already in some kind of comatose, blacked out state.
Yeah,
and then of course, in the middle of the whole act, that's when he visualizes his mom, and just conveniently, there's a knife like right there on the bed that he just slit her throat with. So
yeah, that's a little odd to me. But going back and thinking about that, it does really seem like Sheriff Romero mm-hmm. almost knew that that's how she was when they had that scene. You know, last episode when he was letting Norman know, you know, she slept with a lot of people.
Okay.
Maybe she took advantage of you. Just let me know. I need to know because your semen is inside her. You know, that... Mm-hmm. that.
Just let me know because your semen is inside her. Yeah. So I'd like to know how it got there.
Because he seems...
Well, so would Dua. I mean, it makes any sense to her.
It's not just me. Yeah, so I... Yeah.
We're just going down that same path. Okay, well let's move on from that too then, because we can just obviously it's so much fun just dissecting this, but we should hit other parts of the show. Like for example, let's talk about Norman getting kidnapped. I believe we all kind of assumed at the end of last week's episode that we figured out that Nick Ford was behind this kidnapping, but mm-hmm. we assumed that he figured out about Norman and Miss Watson, possibly from Deputy Lynn, but
you
it turns
assumed.
Out.
I did not assume.
Oh, you did not assume? Okay. All right. I think it was a fair assumption to make based
yes.
on that, however.
Yeah.
And it turns out that no, he was using Norman as
a fulcrum,
as a hook, yeah, as bait mm-hmm. for Nora to follow through, get Dylan to follow through and kill Zane.
Yeah.
So, which was a very, very interesting, I thought it was a very, very interesting take, and it put the stakes up really high for Norma and Dylan to connect mm-hmm. and Norma to go out there and convince Dylan and obviously for Dylan to make up his mind on whose side he's on. You know, is he on Jody's side and doesn't want to kill her brother, or is he going to help out Norma and thus help out Nick Ford, who it seems like he doesn't like? Or at least as of this episode beforehand.
I got to say, you know, I like the way they write Dylan, and I like the way he plays it. I mean, you know, for me, I you know, how about you? But every now and then I'll put myself in the character's shoes and be like, what would I do? I'd be dead. I'd have effed up. There's no question. I'd have screwed up at some point or another. I'd have said the wrong thing. I'd have done the wrong thing. There's no way I could ever be in a big-time criminal enterprise because I have way too much of a big mouth. And I'd be like, oh, I was talking to face yep. blown off. Mm. So I'm always
doesn't
impressed.
Take much.
No, it doesn't. And I'm always impressed when they have a really quiet, like, thinking, like, I'm going to go slow through this. And I think Dylan played it, you know, I think that they wrote it just right, and he played it just right. I've said it for a long time. I love good writing when it feels like this is the way it had to go. There is no real other way for it to have gone. It just feels like the characters had to make these choices, and I think that's the way they set this up. But I felt like Dylan was great this episode. Mm. Like, he went in there very careful, very cautious, didn't come down on one side or the other when Zane baited him. Mm-hmm. And then when he went to Ford, you know, and he's like, hey, you know, I'll tell you where he is. And Ford blew it for himself, man. He comes out, he basically telegraphs the whole scene. I'm going to kill you. We're going outside, though, because I like my carpet. Like, that's, you know, that's...
yeah, pretty much said that.
He could have gotten him outside without the gun, I think.
So there are two. There are two really interesting. There were two really interesting sides to that. First of all, let me ask you guys one question. Do you think Jody told Zane after that that Dylan was on his way over?
No, I don't think so, because if that was the case, then Zane would have just killed him.
I think.
Well, because Zane seemed they played that whole scene very mysterious. Zane stayed on the table. He stayed sitting by the table, and he was like, you know, what is that? Give me your gun. Mm. Who knows? You might be here to kill you. If I was Dylan in that situation, I'd be like, all right, I just saved your life about a week ago.
Yeah,
jumping in front of a car.
I was thinking that too. I mean, he just saved his life about a week ago or so, and here Zane is saying this. But he also knows that this was before Dylan hooked up with Jody, uh-huh. and before he knew that Jody, and he knew that Jody told Dylan to watch over Zane, that he was technically the boss.
Well, and this is also before the big blow up when they went after when they shot up
before the warehouse
That to me, that's a turning point.
But I think it's really just easy to see how paranoid Zane is, and his methodology, what his intentions are just to create chaos and he really lives by the sword, even though he's using a gun. He pretty much lives by the sword. He an eye for an eye and don't trust anybody.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, I felt in this episode that was the closest Zane came to being a credible, together, grown up.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because the flip side of the coin is after Zane and Dylan's interaction, now look at Nick and Dylan's interaction. And, you know, this is somebody that has just kidnapped his brother, mm-hmm. and wants him to kill somebody. And then Dylan walks in there and he's so, you know, he doesn't seem scared. He doesn't have anybody else with him. He seems kind of almost self-entitled, you know, doesn't, like, watch his back at all. And then, of course, what happens? He gets killed. Like, wouldn't you have somebody else in the room with you? Like, just – or at least have him searched or have, you know, some type of security there. It seemed very –
I bought it. I'll tell you why I bought it and tell me what you think. You know, there's a moment, I think, when you've achieved some of the things you wanted to achieve and you sit down. I don't have a big, huge desk like that, although I'd like one. I think it's really cool. And I love that office with that view. I would imagine that there are moments where you sit down and you go, and you just feel that this is all the stuff you've achieved. You've gotten this. You've done this. Mm-hmm. Your guys have frisked this kid coming in. You know, you may be in your 50s, but you're a tough guy. You've been doing this a long time. He's not a big guy. Dylan's a little guy. You know, mm-hmm. he's a little guy. I wouldn't feel personally threatened, and I don't necessarily want all my other guys knowing everything that's going on, but I think there's a genuine vulnerability that comes when you're too comfy in your house. And I think that's where Ford landed.
Too comfortable. That's exactly it. Hmm. I think that's what happened. And it's interesting that, you know, the amateur was acting a little bit more cautious than, you know, the veteran.
Well, that's, I think.
And the veteran was the one that ended up getting killed.
I think that's it. And I think if he'd felt more that the stakes were high, he would never have shown him the gun right away. He'd have said, all right, let's go outside and have a cigar, and smoked him on a patio without Dylan would never have thought anything was going to happen.
I could totally agree with that, unless the only other option I could think of is maybe Nick wasn't going to kill him, but was just trying to scare him a little bit. Because I really thought it was really weird when he said, so you can't help me. And Dylan said, well, not by myself, which I thought was really Dylan's way of saying, I surrender to you. I get that you are the greater good out of the two.
Yeah.
I just can't put my life at risk without some help.
There's never any place for a traitor, though. There really isn't. There's never any place for somebody who's going to flip. Like, if you'll go from backing Zane to backing Nick, Nick knows that you'll eventually go from backing him to backing somebody else.
Yeah.
You can't be trusted. So,
well, he was going to, that was putting him in an impossible situation anyway.
Well, no
and
question.
The only end game was to kill him.
Absolutely.
I mean,
Dylan's important to us, but it's not like he's been around this drug scene for all that long. He's been there a little over a year. And he's risen up because he's capable, but it's not like anybody's going to miss him, particularly if he's dead. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, no, it makes sense.
Like, for us, we have an investment, but nobody else does.
Yeah. Mm. That's right. I simply thought he was going to show him where his brother was. I thought his brother... I was like, come on, come with me. I'm going to take you to the property.
No,
like,
Nick Gunn plays for keeps, man.
I don't think he would have shown him... Well, you know, it's possible maybe he would show him where Norman is to say...
Nick Ford, pardon me.
Here's some extra motivation for you. You don't think you can do it on your own? Well, guess what? This is what you're fighting for, to get Norman back. So it's very possible. But I'm willing to suspend some disbelief on that. But I do agree. I mean, don't forget, they're in a small town in Oregon. Maybe He just assumes, yeah, you'll remember, don't forget the one thing he said that I thought was really interesting at the beginning of Nick's meeting with Dylan when Dylan went over. Last week he mentioned about pleasantries, how important pleasantries are. Yeah. And he started with pleasantries to Dylan, and Dylan was like, yes, you know, he actually went, I don't have my notes in front of me, but he pretty much said it like, how are you? Fine. Mm-hmm. They did the pleasantries. So this was already Dylan kind of bowing down to his status and, mm-hmm. and saying, okay, I get it. This is the game we have to play first. We have to talk first. Mm-hmm. And then you'll talk to me, and then I'll talk back to you, and we will decide we'll have this conversation. So I still feel for some reason that there were pleasantries being, permitted by Nick. And again, I'm not 100% sure if he would have killed Dylan on the spot, if that was his automatic intention, but because again, I agree with you in the sense that I think he just would have been like, hey guys, come over here. And they would have grabbed Dylan and dragged him over.
Oh.
I would have seen that.
Or he would have just pressed a button on his desk and like a floor
like
would
Mr.
have opened.
Yeah.
You know, I really do think though, there's a lot to be said for, you know, when you're a tough guy and you get older, Your body has gone to a place your mind hasn't necessarily caught up with. Like my father's 84. He was a badass from back in the day. And mm-hmm. I remember my father getting into fights into his late 60s, and his brain just not really not really computing that you're not
He's
a kid
old.
Anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that's very much a thing. Mm. And so I think that's probably what happened with Nick Ford. If you want to break it all down real quick and easy. He thought he could just take Dylan. He looked at the little guy and he said, I got you.
Well, there's two other things to keep in mind here. First of all, we've definitely seen Nick the most unhinged that he has been this season and this episode. We saw him obviously really, really angry. I mean, he wants Dane dead, and Dylan hasn't been helping out. So he had to resort to kidnapping Norman. So and then to boot, he gets given the beads and the clipping that Norman had when Norman was on the run and falling out.
That's just out there. Like what he was going to do. I was so excited to see what he was going to do about that.
Yeah.
And now he's just dead. I felt like his death was so abrupt.
I agree with you. I feel like his death was abrupt. But at the same time, I do feel like he obviously has had a lot on his mind. So it's possible that he was, you know, cutting corners, so to speak, by trying to get Dylan out there and just thinking, you know, I'm done with you. Just come on out right now. We're not going to do this in here. Let's go.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I think he would have, you know, if he had hindsight, would have been like, well, maybe I should have brought one or two of my guys in here with me. Maybe I shouldn't have said, like, you know, maybe I shouldn't have made it sound so obvious.
Then again, you know, he can't say anything because his face is broken. I love the effect of just his jaw just being just enough off where you feel that it's wrong. And, oh, that was so well done. I was like, oh, Doc, it's just that little bit off.
Yeah.
It just makes my brain scream.
But it's a shame because he is a good character, and it would have been nice to see a little bit
too.
More.
He's
and a great actor.
He's a treat to have.
Phenomenal. And of course, you know, really would have been nice to see what he would do. Well, we saw a little bit, I guess, of what he did to Norman once he found out, because we saw that one scene in the dark when Norman was getting, I guess it was pummeled. It was kind of hard for me to see on my TV, but it was like right before his dream sequence. There was a lot of shaking. It was right after Nick discovered had the pearls and the clipping in his hands.
Oh, I think I might have missed that. Where the box gets pummeled?
Yeah, it was like, do you remember that? It was right before the dream sequence. It was right before the first dream sequence with his mom. Where there was like a lot of shaking, and I couldn't tell because I was watching the TV. I had a big glare on my TV and I can't see the dark scenes as well. So forgive me, guys. But, there was a lot of shaking or something like that. And I thought it was like someone like literally opening the box and pummeling Norman, and then him just like kind of
going out.
Yeah.
No, I didn't see that. I think he might have been just trying to get out of the box some more and hitting the box. He was hitting the box quite a bit.
He was hitting the box during the daylight. I saw. I didn't realize he was hitting the box at night, but or maybe shaking for some reason.
So,
So forgive me, guys, if I got that.
You know,
one
I
wrong.
Think there's a lot of shows the last year and a half or so that are shooting in the dark because they think that our TVs can keep up, but they can't. I think we lose a lot. I think there's a lot of shows that are doing it right now, and it's very frustrating as a viewer because I've got a brand new TV and it's very good, and I can't see so much.
Mm.
And, you know, and I think because they have a kind of like, we've got new cameras, we can do this amazing shooting in the dark.
Yeah. And, oh, I agree. Some of it gets completely lost in the dark sometimes.
And it's like, you know, a few years ago we'd have had the humility to go, no, we need to light this, but now they got no, the camera can do it, and I just don't think our TVs can keep up with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it leaves a lot of mystery, which I think is also their intention sometimes, some mystery, but when it comes to plot and trying to figure out certain things.
Yeah.
Oh, it's very frustrating.
Yeah.
And you go, I don't know about you, but I go back and I watch and I'm like, God, boss, put a light on it.
What were you going to say, Dua?
How adorable was Norma this episode?
How brilliant.
Yeah. I just thought that she was almost like the comic relief this episode. Like the scene when she was over at Dylan's.
Oh, with the camera, security camera.
But she's like sitting there and she's like jumping up and down and she was like screaming and yelling. And I really felt like, you know, her, like now they're taking her meltdown and her just like completely falling apart and taking it almost to a funny level in order to kind of balance everything else that's so dark this episode.
Yeah.
She's a brilliant lady. Should we talk about Norma? Are we ready to talk about Norma?
Yeah, let's talk about Norma. I think we're ready to talk about her.
She wins acting again. I say it every week, but because she's flipping brilliant, and that's it. I love her so, so very much. I loved her stuff with Emma. I love watching the choices. Poor Emma. Aww.
I felt really bad for her this episode.
Yeah. Emma definitely
all
was
I want
like,
is a mother's love, and Norma's like, no, honey.
Why am I being completely ignored? Yeah. I'm like, I'm going to give my 2 weeks notice because no one wants to talk to me. Okay.
So I'm going to go eat worms.
Yeah.
All I want is a goddamn hug. And she's like, no, it's not going to happen. We're going to miss you.
But what was interesting, though,
it was a choice.
Yeah, it was a choice. But what was interesting, too, is after George left, after George came over to the house and Norma just starts screaming at him and get the hell out and just saying, you know, you don't understand my world or whatever it was she was saying. And then George runs out and Norma runs after him. Emma was there to console Norma. And considering the fact that Norman's imprisoned right now, who knows what the hell Dylan's doing, and George, you know, came over and tried to be a nice guy, like he's doing, and she shooed him off. She's all by herself at this moment.
Well,
so Emma's there to console her.
Metaphorically, do you think that was Norma's chance at happiness driving off? Do you think that's what that was?
Well,
once again, we've chosen the boy who's the boy who will eventually be...
Well,
a serial killer.
It's interesting because we've discussed so much about George. You know, is he just this vanilla guy? Is there something up his sleeve? It kind of seemed like this episode he was just the vanilla guy.
It might that was be just the vanilla guy.
The good guy. But, you know, put up against everything else, you know, in this show, he seemed off. He didn't seem right. He didn't fit in at all. And Norma didn't know how to handle it. And so that was, I think that, metaphorically, it was very symbolic of him just driving off. You know, he was very, very nurturing, has just been nothing but sweet to her.
Yeah.
And she does not know how to take that at all.
Well, and also she can't even tell anybody right now what she's going through because of the threat that Nick has put on her. If Romero or anyone finds out, then, you know, that's going to be the end of Norman. It's very, very interesting to see, like, the scenes with Romero trying to get in to see Norman were kind of funny, too, in a way, you know, and her making all these excuses up. And obviously Romero cares enough about Norma and trusts her enough to say, okay, if he's really sick, I got to see him eventually. I got to see him sooner rather than later, but I'll go, you know, I will see him. And then also, you know, that's why she couldn't tell Emma in a way about anything, even though Emma was getting hurt because she felt she couldn't trust. She couldn't talk to anyone about it. I mean, she should have probably trusted Emma, but she really, really wanted to stand firm.
So was it a conscious choice in that moment when Emma and Norma were outside at the front door and Emma's putting in her 2 week notice in tears and Norma she looks at her and she has that moment of recognition where she feels very sorry for her, but then she quickly kind of pulls back and then she's like, okay, you know, I'm sorry to hear that. Now, was she purposely protecting Emma?
Actually, I think...
or was this just she was completely oblivious?
I take back what I said. I think it's more about being oblivious, but I think also one thing that I neglected to say about Norma that I thought was really big was when Romero finally admitted to Norma why he wanted to talk to her, to Norman, when he mentioned the sex. And seeing the look in Norma's face of shock.
She wins acting again.
And
she is when she closes the door and she just
hyperventilates and collapses.
And it just goosebumps. I mean, she is just like, every time she's on screen and I just feel so much, I believe everything she does. There's never a time when I feel like, that was ridiculous. She just, it's motivated, it's connected, and it just flows.
And the first thing she does is, of course, call Norman's phone for the 16th time, because she called like 15 times earlier.
Which is so sweet. It's like, I'm just going to leave a message on your phone. Like, I know that you're not going to pick up. I don't know what's good, but I just need to hear your voice.
And I love you. I love you more than anything. Exactly what Norman was saying, the game has changed last week, that the game was that we love each other no matter what. And, you know, Norman, then she stormed off, but here she comes back again. I love you more than anything. So I think, given that piece of information, when Emma comes over to say the 2 week notice, I just think that Norma, as much as we love her, you know, the way she's being portrayed, I think it's just a very incredibly selfish. Mm-hmm. And it's a selfish moment for Norma. It's a very selfish and oblivious moment.
Oblivious
yeah. and selfish.
But I hesitate to go with selfish because I just, maybe it's because I'm in love with her, but I didn't feel like she even, I don't even feel like she understood what it was that Emma was asking for.
But I think the reason why it's selfish is because she just found out that Norman had sex with Miss Watson, and here comes another girl who has had interest in Norman. And I think Norma kind of sees that. She mm-hmm. sees what Emma signifies possibly to Norman. And here comes a person who cares just as much about Norman, and she's like, no. My Norman. This is my secret. This is what I get to deal with.
In fairness, nobody cares about Norman as much as she does.
Yeah.
And
it's always about protecting Norman. It
becomes very, very blind eventually. And it becomes very, very, obviously it goes down a very dangerous road. But I think with Emma, you know, I think there's times, I don't know about you guys, where when you're an adult and you have, you know, real adult problems, mm-hmm. and I've never had her level of real adult problems by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, where when someone comes to you with what are very big teenage problems, mm-hmm. you're like, I want to empathize. I do, but I don't have the energy and I'm sorry. I can't. Mm. And I would imagine that Norma in this instance was not even in the place to do that. It was more like, okay, I get it. And this is probably for the best anyway. I understand. Okay, bye. Like, that's all I can do. Mm-hmm. But you know, for Emma, she's coming there with her heart on her sleeve. Just let me be in the family. Let me be a part. Let me be my mom.
It was heartbreaking.
Be my mom. I need one.
Yeah.
And Norma is just, I think, oblivious more than anything else.
I think you can be selfish and be oblivious at the same time. I'm not, I don't think she realizes she's being selfish, but I think Norma it always is. She's very selfish when it comes to wanting to overprotect Norman. Not letting Norman live his certain way. Not letting Norman want to learn to drive. Not telling Norman things. I think she has very selfish reasons. Selfish mm-hmm. doesn't have to be a negative. But I do think in this case, here is Emma. Here's someone she could focus out to and just reach out to Emma mm-hmm. in a time when Emma's being very vulnerable. And also support. She could support Emma, and Emma could support her, and she's being very selfish and not saying, I don't need you right now. Mm-hmm. It's all about me and my son, and that's what I care about, and I don't want another woman getting involved.
Yeah.
Another girl, another possible interest getting involved.
I never felt like she felt threatened by Norma, though.
I don't think it's a threatening thing. I just think it's I want him to myself. And if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense. But, that's the way I see that. So, let's see. What else do we need to talk about in this episode? Because I think...
lie detector test.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit more about Romero going for the lie detector test. He goes to his father's ex-partner,
mm-hmm.
who is apparently very, very good at doing polygraph tests.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that happens, how will you deal with that? We'll have the sample, the polygraph, and the memory.
What proof will it take, Dua?
At that point, then what? Presuming he does not pass the polygraph test.
It's not that I do believe it or that I don't believe it. I just don't want to leave anything. There's just always
you would be murder on a jury. So like here's all the things we've laid out. This man is truly guilty. The 11 of you seem really convinced, but I wonder.
But I will say this. I don't think that the polygraph test is the answer, because I think if Norman truly believes he didn't have sex with her.
Yes.
Well, I mean, the lie detector test is supposed to do.
Now that he's had the memory.
Exactly. Now that he's had the memory, now he doesn't know what, you know, and how he's going to respond to a polygraph. Anyway, this would be a very, very interesting, scene.
So you're saying it's possible that Norman could now believe that he did have sex with her, even if he didn't, and
at this point,
the polygraph test.
Well, the polygraph isn't going to say what you're saying is it's not going to give you a correct. And if you ask me if it's green and I say yes, and it's blue, it's not going to show blue, but it's going to show any kind of confusion.
Yeah.
So if it shows that I'm not sure, then it's going to show as a lie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if he's conflicted, it'll probably roll as a lie, unless, as we learned in Annie's. The other show. Oh, darn it. The Americans, if you clench your butt, apparently you can beat the polygraph. I don't know if you guys knew that.
Clench your butt?
That's part of the Americans thing.
Really?
Yeah. And you beat the polygraph.
Well, that don't forget, The Americans takes place in the 1960s. So
1980s. 1981, 82.
Did I say 60s? I meant
80s.
I know you did.
What is it? Does it have something to do with like your heart rate? Like
I have
your
no idea.
Your heart rate? Because it's like it's inconsistencies in your heart rhythm, correct?
Yeah, but again, that might be something that might not exist nowadays. I don't think clenching the butt will do it. Nowadays, you think so?
Like what? I just did this the whole time. I've been up here like this.
I'd like to see someone in the polygraph test go, "Don't clench your butt,
right?
Don't clench your butt."
Can you please? What's
keep that
you?
Last
please.
Monitor? What's that last monitor? Oh, we're on to you, pal.
Yes. Can you?
For our last question, have you guys been clenching your butt this entire time?
Yes.
What? No. Yes. Oh.
Oh.
There it goes.
Yes, absolutely.
So why is Romero so obsessed with this? He's kind of like this is like his number one priority right now. This is all that he's about. He's very obsessed with this.
One of the line that he said, I don't have my notes in front of me, but one of the line that he said during that scene that I thought was really significant is if he went by the letter of the law, the town would have been boarded up a long time ago. So yeah, why does this crime, especially when he even admits the guy who's in jail deserves to be in jail. He's a lowlife who deserves to be in jail, but he wants to know the truth. So the question is, why is he so adamant to know if Norman did have sex with that woman?
Exactly. He seems almost obsessed with it. It's like so he knows something about Miss Watson that nobody else knows. He seems really all about this.
I mean, the only other thing I could think of is maybe he's a former lover spurned as well. Maybe the fact that, that just came to mind now. I wasn't thinking about it earlier, but it's possible that maybe Romero had an affair too. And that could also explain why when he was talking to Norman, he's like, she's had sex with a lot of bad people. Yeah. Not a lot of good ones. Like he's almost kind of like a very subtle, like
a jilted
trash
lover.
A little subtle, like trash talking of her, like a jilted lover type of thing.
Well, there's something else too. I mean, I think there's two things I think motivating him. I don't know why I have to have four fingers up for that. That's a little weird.
Right.
But I think there's two things motivating him. I think number one, his job is always to keep the proverbial ish in the horse. I mean, that's his job in this town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so Nick Ford being after him to come up with the killer. And then if Nick Ford has any qualms about the fact that we put this other guy away for it, then he needs to know. Romero needs to know about it. He needs to have an answer for it.
Mm.
And the other thing is he's still the sheriff of the town. So it may be as simple as I need to know.
Yeah,
I really do need to know. And I'm living here in my town. I'm staying at their hotel. If this kid is capable of murdering this woman and lying to my face, I need to know about it.
Because I didn't suspect it, maybe.
Yeah, and that's it. Like, right? So if he's able to fool me like this, then I need to know what I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
Well, not in my town.
Not in my... not this day. Not this day.
Ah, Nestor.
Well, I mean, obviously, he also needs to know if he needs to protect Norman from Nick Ford if he did have sex with their wife.
Not anymore.
But, well, he doesn't know that yet. But absolutely.
So what's going to happen there? How did we leave that? Was it Dylan just walked out?
Yeah, apparently Nick Ford's guys are really casual about the back door. I mean, they're very serious about the front door, but the back, they're like, nah, no one will go that way.
No one will go that way. Nick's got it.
It's like an episode of The Simpsons where it's like the front door is like, the back door is like, this is a revolving
door. I mean, maybe it's, again, overconfidence from Nick thinking that he had Dylan. The fact that Dylan came over was complete surrender. The fact that Dylan is saying the pleasantries with him in the beginning is complete surrender. Mm-hmm. You know, admitting that he didn't kill Zane yet and that he needs help is complete surrender. So, you know, he didn't really have the guys like on alert. And
he underestimated him.
He underestimated him. Probably, possibly overconfidence. I mean, I didn't bring it up like that before, but that's the only excuse. Or Dylan's a ninja and he's busy. Like what we don't see between this week, this week and next week is him like hiding behind furniture and creeping around like Metal Gear Solid and putting cardboard boxes on top of them and walking by.
I think the other thing is worth pointing out is that these aren't Pablo Escobar's guys. This is the pot guys. It's not like they're used to wars. You know what I'm saying?
Hey.
It's not like there's 10,000 dead guys up in Oregon that
we're
worried about.
All the guards are like in front of the fridge going, what do you want to eat now?
You know what I mean? It's not
Juarez, Mexico.
That's it. It's not on that level. You know what I mean? There's nobody getting duct taped to a table and they're not peeling anybody's face off. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like that. So I think that this war that they're having is an aberration. It is not business as usual.
Mm.
And so I think that, you know, maybe that's part of it too. These guys really aren't used to being this way. They didn't seem like they were used to it. Like they brought him a sandwich wrapped in cellophane and a gallon of water. I mean, clearly they went to the 7-Eleven to get food for the hostage. They didn't know how to do it. Do you know what I mean? They're like, Well, hell, what do we give? I don't know. Well, go on in the store and get him some. Well, you think he likes peanut butter? What the hell do I care if he likes peanut butter and jelly?
I thought it was an interesting food choice.
Sandwich.
I thought it was an interesting food choice that they gave him.
You know, so I mean, like, I it's amateur hour from the drug war perspective. So, you know, I think we don't want to give
him
too much credit.
How would the Mexican cartel give their prisoner? They wouldn't give him any food?
No, they wouldn't give him any food. They'd take his clothes off and kick him with a bat.
They kick people with bats, which is almost impossible to do from my understanding of how physics works, kicking and bats. But... Because you'd hit people,
you hit people with a bat,
and then you kick people with your foot.
I got that.
Unless you have a wooden leg.
a guy with a wooden leg. What was the wooden leg? What was his name? Named Pete? What was the name of the other leg? What?
Man with a
wooden
joke?
No, it's the joke from Mary Poppins. A wooden leg named Pete. What was the name of the other leg?
The name of the other leg? I have no idea.
Ah, never mind.
I'll have to watch Mary Poppins.
I think it's Mary Poppins.
No, okay. But that was the punchline. What was the name of the other leg?
That's not, I'm saying.
Yeah, because it was the guy with the wooden leg.
The man with a wooden leg named Pete.
What was the name of the other leg?
I apologize in advance. This is the part of the show.
It took way too long.
It took way too long.
40 minutes in. That's actually pretty good.
No,
that's
pretty
good.
That is pretty good. So where we're left off right now is it looks like Nick Ford's dead. Dylan is somewhere being a ninja in the complex.
It looks like he's dead. He's going to come back next episode with like a
his face is kicking
jaw.
Off to the side.
I would say he's dead. Yes, he's dead. I'm used to you guys on other shows saying I think so and so still alive. Like in the following, you know, like they might be alive.
In all fairness, Luke has been shot multiple times. And it's still, you know, yeah. but can we say 80% chance Nick's dead? What do you say, 30% chance that he had sex with Norman had sex
what
with
percent chance
Blair?
Would you say?
It's funny because it's you guys that won't let this go.
7.5% chance.
You guys.
There's a 1 in 60 chance. The
you guys
ad,
think
you know.
It's ridiculous, but you keep bringing it up.
Oh, keep bringing it up because we keep seeing proof that he had sex with her. I would not have brought this question up if the last scene did not show that big memory softcore Skinamax version of him having sex.
I only watched it 4 times. I don't know about you, but that's how many times I watched it.
How many takes do you think that they did of that? Freddie Highmore is like, let's do another take.
You know,
let's
just get
one more take.
I didn't feel right.
Can we do one more take of that?
I just think it's, well, think of it this way. 2 weeks ago, we just didn't even think you knew what sex was. So yeah. it's an improvement. This is
Thanks.
An improvement. Okay?
Appreciate that.
Yes, you're welcome.
You know what we didn't talk about is the psychological ramifications of Norman in the box.
Touched upon it a little bit just with the what I was saying. But, yeah, let's talk a little bit more about that.
I mean, I think if we want to find out how to make
somebody
who's 60% bananas all the way, mm-hmm. you stick them in a box in the forest in the rain for a couple of days and see
what
happens.
Can I just say also, I just have to say this, since Carlton Cuse is one of the executive producers, that whole box thing, it just kind of reminded me of The Hatch. And Lost a little bit. It was very much so Hatch-esque.
I don't know if, for those of you that are Lost fans, mm-hmm. The scene with Sheriff Romero and the lie detector guy, mm-hmm. In the background, there was Patsy Cline playing.
Yes.
And if you remember watching Lost, all of the flashbacks with Evangeline Lilly's character always had Patsy Cline playing in the background. It was just
was
really interesting. And that was the first thing that I thought of.
Very good.
Yes.
Nice little Easter egg.
It's when Nestor Carbonell was here, he mentioned that, you know, he's talked to a lot of psychologists and most of the time psychos are just, they're pretty much hardwired the way that they are, but they need triggers. They need something to kind of like trigger it and bring them out. So
like being locked in a box.
Like being locked in a box is pretty much like what, you know, how is he going to behave after this episode? Like this is definitely traumatic for him. And what is trauma going to do to somebody that is crazy? So. Yeah, this should be fun. I'm excited.
Well,
to see what
I mean, like I said before, he has no place to run in there. He's trapped with his own demons, and he is processing what he has become or what, you know, what he did. Oh. So, and of course, you know, you saw him trying to get out. He feels unjust being in there.
Mm-hmm.
So it really comes down to this rage that we've seen him, you know, tearing into this box. What's going to happen when those doors are open? And what's he become? What realization does he
made? That's what we talked about a few weeks ago, right? The idea that you've created this other person to do the bad things for you. So are we merging them? Has the box been? Will the box be a merging moment, or will it be more of a split?
I feel like it's going to be more of a merging moment. You realize that when he was having the interlude with the sandwich and everything, when he was talking to the goons,
yes,
for lack of a better word. He was he was not nice. He was not regular, you know,
no,
nice,
not.
Pleasant Norman. He was very much almost becoming more of like an animal, you know, running down, trying to escape, running down the forest. Mm. So I think that, you know, I think that he's kind of becoming more of himself. And I think that they're merging. This is
Got
my
it.
Thought.
I liked that he ran. I thought that was an excellent choice.
He threw that sandwich and took off.
I always hate it when they're like, no, I'm just going to sit and see what happens. No, that's so unrealistic. You run. You hope for the best.
But just as bad is there's acceptance there. And now that he has this memory and he's willing to accept it, mm-hmm. what's that going to make of him?
Yeah.
Well, that's the question. Is he going to accept it? Is he going to?
I think he is. I think based on what we see in next week's episode, I think he definitely is.
Okay, so and I got something to tell you, Mother. So if he accepts it, then if he tells Norma, then what? Because up till now, we can kind of play the game that Norma has been protecting him based on one episode with Dad, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But once we say, okay, now we know for sure that he had sex with Blair Watson and killed Blair Watson. Now what's Norma's new role? Now she's protecting someone who's killed more than once.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, really, I mean, it's a different role. I mean, you're endangering everybody, and you're knowingly doing it.
Hmm. Well, what I find interesting is that, you know, Norma has been protecting him, but while doing so has not told him anything and doesn't want to talk about it at all. So now that he has this memory, when he goes back to her and he's like, this is what I remember, you know, what is she going to say? No, that didn't happen. This happened. Or how is she going to maneuver that? Because he's not going to believe anything that she's saying. She's wondering why, you know, she's keeping all of this stuff from him, or why that he, you know, becomes violent when he blacks out. Like, now that he knows why she's doing it.
Well, what I think is interesting is that the writers have set up such a really, really great, really, really great scenario for the characters, because there's a decision to be made. They've already convicted somebody else of the crime. So at this point, it's not like it's an open investigation. So at this point, a scumbag is in prison, right? Isn't that how Sheriff Romero put it? The guy's a scumbag anyway.
Yeah,
he deserves to do the time, no matter what.
Pretty much.
So we've got somebody that's already been pinned. The crime's already been pinned on. So it's not like Norma would have the out. It's not like Norma would have the out of the police coming to the door and saying, "We've proven it was your son, and we have to take him away." That's not going to happen. Hmm. So she has to make the choice. If he comes out and says to her mom, "This is what I did," so she has to actively choose to not tell the police. She has to actively choose to keep her son, who slit a woman's throat in cold blood.
Mm-hmm. Not only not
from
to not
prison.
Tell, to hide, because Romero is now actively seeking it.
So this is, I love what they've done here. They've essentially taken the moral quandary, the moral question, and laid it in front of her with there's no out. She has to make the choice if they do it this way. If he comes to her and says, "I did this." Does that make any sense?
It does make sense.
Which I think is great, because then it forces the character, it forces Norma to choose, and then that is an irrevocable change in the character. Mm. At this point, we can all empathize with Norma, because she's protecting him from one moment, from one accidental moment, and he was protecting her in that moment. Mm. But now, if he murdered Miss Watson, then at this point, she's not protecting her son, who protected her from a guy who was beating the shit out of her. She's now protecting a guy who killed a woman in cold blood.
Yeah,
that's a completely different animal.
She's less sympathetic.
Definitely.
And don't forget, I mean, if we go back to the source material, Psycho, I mean, when we see Norman having these sequences about his mom, it's always his mom is angry at him. And it's always, if I remember correctly, right, his mom's, you know.
But this is all his perception.
It's his perception.
Yeah, in Psycho, he's both characters.
Yes.
He is his mother and he is himself. But we don't know this as the audience until the very end. We always think that his mother is just an angry woman in the closet. But this is his perception of how his mother is treating
him. But even though his mom has always been angry many times this series so far, she still has been very overprotective of him, and it's never really been that demeaning to him.
Correct.
But I feel like in the movie, and I have to rewatch it, it's been a while, that she was a lot more negative.
Yeah.
So the question is, now with all of this coming out, does this change Norma too? Because I feel like, you know, that is also a trigger for Norman, you know, having his mom say, you know, all these things to mm-hmm. him and treat him badly.
Well, it does it change, or does it change just Norman's perception of Norma? Because in the movie Psycho, we only saw it through his eyes.
Yes.
But now in the series, we get to see Norma as a character played by Vera Farmiga, so we can come to our own conclusions as to what we think of her character.
And technically, that dream sequence, that memory that he had, you know, she was saying, you know, she was saying how good girls don't do this, you know, mm-hmm. and she was already, I wouldn't say she was being negative to him, but that was definitely a different side of Norma than we're used to seeing.
Yeah.
So I could totally see that.
And I think that eventually we'll come to a point where, you know, her overbearing, overprotective nature mm-hmm. is, you know, is kind of viewed by him as just, he just finds it so, you know, so annoying to a level where he now is just thinking of it as just, you know, as awful. I think it'll layer up.
Okay.
And, you know, so by the time in 8 years when he decides to become full-blown psycho, he'll just view her now as this crazy woman.
Do you decide or does it just happen? I bet it just happens.
What?
To become full-blown psycho.
I.
You said decide. I'm saying it just happens. Like, oh, one day you're crazed.
Yeah, but I think it's a slow progression.
I agree. Yeah. I'm just saying you don't decide. I think it just happens. Like, oh, it turns out I'm nuts. Damn it.
I'm going to decide to be crazy today.
I'm crazy now.
That's my choice.
Well, should we thank the good folks on iTunes? I don't think we've done that.
We have not done that yet, so I guess we can do that in our section that we like to consider.
I can't believe there's only one episode left.
Is it only one?
Only one.
Only one. Oh, that's what this is all leading down to.
Yeah.
But let's do what we call news and gossip, but really it's just our shout-outs.
Tickety, tickety.
Tickety, tickety. TV News. Okay, that was the ticker right there. Let's do shout-outs for Ace Radical Drago, Luke Livermore, CC Freak, Mary Kay Pearl, Miss Lean, Kim King, Mr. Illusion Eyes. Thank you very much. And then I believe I had a couple of people on iTunes that posted this past week. Elsa 68887. Did I say that?
How many eights?
Elsa 68887.
That's a lot of eights.
There we go. And double the J's.
Double the J's.
Yeah, there we go.
Now, you know, if I did that in front of Joe Brazzi, he'd never let me hear the end of it.
Thank you. And, you know, someone on Twitter also posted. Actually, someone on Twitter posted to do and I. So good, glad to have you both on the show last week without getting interrupted.
What the hell?
I don't have Twitter up or I'd pull it up, but it was just really funny.
Well, let me say to the Twitter, what the hell?
So at this time, let's move on from that to.
Don't feel bad, Sanfilippo. Somebody said that I was a little annoying, and I was like, a little.
And
just
that you didn't know about
annoying.
The show,
that's
but we talked
great.
About it. Yeah, just a little bit.
I was just a little annoying.
I
have some work to do, apparently.
We're going
to
talk.
A lot annoying.
We're going to do some
up the ante, baby.
Predictions, people. Predictions.
Predictions.
And now, you're after Buzz TV. Predictions.
All right, since we're living in a world where Norman didn't have sex with Miss Watson, let's hear what else you have cooked up, Julia. Julia. I just call you Julia. Dua.
That's actually not the first time that's happened. So I definitely think that Norman is going to think that his mother was there mm-hmm. for the killing, okay. and he is now going to reciprocate accordingly. I want to give you kudos to your prediction too. Is that you said that you thought that Dylan would kill Nick, and he did.
Yeah.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
And that's all I have for predictions. I'm just curious as to where this is kind of going to leave Dylan now that he's killed. Now that he's killed Nick, and it's like, is he going to take Zane back? Now he's like, well, is he going to kill Zane now too, and just take over everything? Mm. Ooh, maybe that's my prediction.
There you go,
Dylan. Dylan,
say that again. Say that last part.
Dylan is going to kill Zane and just take over everything.
Dylan T. Potlord.
I like that. Well, and with Jody alongside Jody, yeah. So
or underneath, whichever the case may be. She has predilections.
There you go, Mr. Sanfilippo.
It is my prediction. That, of course, Norman will tell Norma that he killed Mrs. Watson, and Norma will knee-jerk protect him, mm-hmm. and that will change the entire trajectory of her character, mm-hmm. and I think that will change her perception of herself, and I think it will kind of create a downward spiral for her. And as far as Dylan goes with the drugs, I think that killing Nick Ford isn't going to get him very much, to be honest with you. I think it's going to... I mean, it may give him a situation where he's got some credibility with with Zayn, but does he want credibility with Zayn? I mean, Zayn is irresponsible. Zayn is unpredictable. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the question is, can Zayn and Dylan coexist under Jody? That would be really uncomfortable. But I mean, I don't know that that's possible. So I think
see what you did there. Sorry. Nothing.
Can I go?
Go ahead.
So I don't think that's a tenable situation. So I think it's got to either be Zayn or Dylan. So I kind of think it's going to end up being Dylan, and Zayn's going to have to get killed.
I just love seeing your mind work during predictions. I just love it.
It's slow. It's such a verbal.
It's like a verbal like.
Just dribbles out. I should write them down in advance.
His whole interior monologue just goes out. Okay.
Yeah,
everything is logically plotted out in his head.
We were ragging on you a little bit for
Blacklist. They were giving me some grief for the Blacklist. And they weren't wrong.
A little verbal diarrhea for the predictions. I predict, you know, here's the interesting thing, because Emma has felt so slighted that I really feel that she's going to be the only person Norman trusts, and I could totally see the season ending, and this might sound weird, with Norman running off to Emma somewhere or staying at her place with Emma's family or something and just distancing himself from his mom.
Interesting.
I could totally see that. I feel like there's definitely a reason why Emma's feeling slighted right now, and I think she's going to end up being Norman's only confidant for the near future.
I hope so. That would be sweet. Mm. A little bit of sweet. I feel like they're both so sad right now.
I think it's so cute that you have hope, Light. We know how this ends.
We have another season. We'll see what happens. So yeah, well, absolutely.
And then they'll be signed on for another season.
Yeah.
After that.
And then we'll see what happens then.
He's got a lot of time to be crazy.
That Vera Farmiga.
Dua Casey, where can we find you during the week?
You can find me at Dua Casey on the Twitters.
On Twitters. Awesome. And Mr. Sanfilippo?
You can find me on the Twitters at Joe Filippo, JoeFlippo. And then my website is josephsanfilippo.com.
Joe Braswell, who's not here, you can find him on Twitter at Joseph K. Braswell. And he also hosts a bunch of shows with Sanfilippo and myself and some extra shows here on AfterBuzz, like Hannibal and the Bates... that's Bates Hotel. And the Blacklist. And we just finished The Following, and you guys are doing Mad Men. You can find here on AfterBuzz doing those shows, as well as 24, Orphan Black. And you can find me on Twitter at Nandovel, NANDOVEL. And next week, season finale.
Woo-hoo.
Oh boy, it's going to be big. Please tune in next week. Can't wait to hear from you then. Till then.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.